Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, a clinical leader in obesity medicine.
In Greek mythology, there is a figure named Tantalus. Tantalus was a son of Zeus who attempted to deceive and trick the gods. His punishment for his indiscretion was banishment to Tartarus, where he was made to stand in a pool of water beneath a fruit tree with low branches. When he would reach for the branches, the wind would lift them out of his reach. And when he tried to reach down for water, the water would recede, denying him drink. His name is the origin of the word tantalize, which means to torment with the sight of something desired but out of reach, teased by rousing expectations that are repeatedly disappointed. What I feel is tantalizing about obesity medicine today is that we have a wonderful selection of GLP-1 and GIP receptor agonists that are extremely effective for helping people lose weight, but are so costly that they're often out of reach. And so, like Tantalus, we see the opportunity to provide excellent treatment options for our patients only to find them out of reach due to cost and coverage issues. Hi, I'm Dr. Nick Pennings, Chair of Family Medicine at the Campbell University School of Osteopathic Medicine and Executive Director for the Obesity Medicine Association. And today's podcast is part of a series of podcasts on advocacy for patients with obesity. With me today is Verlin Warrington, MD, and Vivian Rose, MD. Dr. Warrington, can you tell us about yourself?
So I am a family physician by training. I now practice solely obesity medicine. I am privileged to engage in clinical medicine. I run and oversee a couple of clinics. I also act as my systems liaison with primary care in all things obesity related. I have the opportunity to teach residents and train other learners in the ways of obesity training. So I'm a professor at the Geisinger School of Medicine, the Department of Family Medicine, and have really been enjoying this immersive obesity experience over the last 10 years or so.
Oh, that's great. I find treating patients with obesity a very rewarding experience. And Dr. Rose, tell us about yourself.
Well, I first of all, I just really thought that intro was just wonderful. And I couldn't think of a better word than tantalizing. It's so appropriate. I am a family physician by training, trained in Baltimore, went to medical school in Baltimore, and recognized at some point that we have a problem and decided to work with Dr. Warrington at the time to develop a program that patients could get direct treatment for obesity medicine. So the years have passed, and now I am working with a federally qualified health center in Baltimore, where the problem is very much so obvious that we do have an issue with treating obesity. I am the center medical director, but also I still do clinical care. And most of the patients I care for are patients who need help with obesity. So being a federally qualified health center, of course, the patient pool that we're talking about are those who are, a lot of them, one, may have no insurance. A lot of them are dependent on medical assistance. Very few have private insurance. Of course, this is a population that suffers so much from all those sequelae of obesity and yet are also suffering from not having access the complete obesity care.
So tell us, what does comprehensive obesity care look like in your practice?
So I practice in Northeast Pennsylvania and upstate New York, so very rural communities, lots of dairy farming. Like Dr. Rose says, we are limited somewhat by our coverage options. So in my practice, we are a specialty practice. And so all of the patients who are referred to me have some sort of coverage. I have very few patients who are not covered. We do provide care to a large number of Medicare as well as medical assistance patients, but we do also have quite a bit of commercially insured patients. I think one of the struggles we have is that we can't treat all patients uniformly, and therapies are directed by what restrictions the insurance would mandate.
And Vivian, you find the same thing in your practice?
Very much so. Again, restricted. We are a company, a group that is very much influenced by what is available through state assistance. Many of our patients, as you would understand, suffer from the social determinants of health. So even something as simple as transport, and so you can see how that will impact them, much more something like getting the pharmacotherapy that they need. So very much impactful for our patient population. So the ideal type of treatment where people have all the options, they have the behavioral therapy, they have nutrition counseling, and they have pharmacotherapy. It's for many of my patients, very far-fetched.
And how does that compare to the coverage of the anti-obesity medications in general?
In my practice, and in my experience doing some state-level work in Pennsylvania, the coverage is very inconsistent, very sporadic, and really not very congruent with what we know about the science of obesity. So I can see anything from absolutely no coverage for medications. They may cover other modalities like surgery. So for example, I see Medicare patients. Surgery is covered, medications are not. In Pennsylvania, we are fortunate that medical assistance will cover medications, but our employee health plan will not. Some insurances will mandate 3 to 6 months of consecutive visits before they will approve medications. And this is not something you would see with any other chronic disease, diabetes, for example. Then there's some that have limited lifetime coverage, so maybe 12 months of coverage per lifetime. And then one that was a little perplexing to me, 30 days of coverage per year. So really, the coverage is not very consistent, not very congruent, and very frustrating as a clinician to have all these really good medications available, but not able to dispense them uniformly across all patients.
Yes, tantalizing.
Tantalizing indeed.
Yes, and would you want to add to that, Vivian?
Just to say, you know, it is so true because we have patients who do need the medication. Unfortunately, I've had to say to many patients, patients come in, now they're on social media, they hear the adverts, and they're like, yeah, this is the thing for me, I need this. So it's like throwing cold water on their hopes when you tell them, yeah, I agree, this is a good medication for you, but there's a problem, we have a hurdle. It's not covered. And I've had many patients say, Dr. Rose, I need this, I want it, I will pay for it, until they realize what the dollar amount is. And that is a big waking up moment. And then we have patients who have also had to say, here's the thing. They might say they might be told they don't qualify for it. And then they say, but my husband is on it. And when you ask, then you realize what the problem, what the issue is. Your husband has a diagnosis of diabetes. So unfortunately, the situation is like, we have to wait until you get sick or you have a problem or another problem, which is the most backward way of doing healthcare. When you have this other problem, then we will cover it, which unfortunately is what happens with the coverage of some of these medicines. If you have a comorbid condition, in some instances, that qualifies you for the help you need to get rid of both the obesity and the comorbid condition.
And that is very frustrating because the best way to manage and prevent diabetes is to maintain a healthy weight or to get to a healthy weight. So it's very frustrating as healthcare providers. You see the opportunity in front of you, and yet you can't take advantage of it.
Exactly.
Very much so.
So, Verlyn, you mentioned that some of the patients are covered for anti-obesity medications on medical assistance. How challenging is that to get patients that even have coverage the medication? Is there a lot of hoops that you have to jump through, or challenges that you have to face, denials you have to get past in order to do that?
Certainly. In Pennsylvania, our medical assistance programs are fairly easy to work with. So there is a prior authorization process. You submit the required paperwork, and that usually works fairly seamlessly. We had a few hiccups when we started, but now it's working fairly seamlessly. Some of the other insurers, though, we struggle. So you may submit the appropriate paperwork and get back denials for all kinds of reasons. One of my favorite is patient did not lose enough weight. Well, patient has not been on said medication previously. So we're getting a lot of just computer generated rejections, it feels like. And so it takes multiple touches and represents a significant burden for staff to continue to pursue these prior auths over and over again.
And it can be difficult because even within within a particular insurance plan, different employers may cover anti-obesity medications and some will not. They have that option, unfortunately, with obesity to opt in or opt out for coverage. So that means that even somebody can have the same plan, but one person is not covered and another person is covered.
Yes, or they may have different requirements in terms of you need to show up for 3 consecutive visits or 6 consecutive visits before the medications will be approved. Or you need to be engaged in what insurance determines to be an appropriate lifestyle, sort of a weight loss experience before they will approve it. So when I first started here, I would have multiple conversations a week with a particular insurer as to why the services at our weight loss center should be at least viewed as equally well as the experience at the Courage Gym or Weight Watchers.
And even within insurance companies, do you find inconsistencies in the approval process?
Yes.
Yes. Bhavine, do you find the same thing?
Yeah, I think that is one of the frustrations of trying to give patient comprehensive care for the obesity right now. The inconsistency where there are so many nuances to it. And when you think you can just, okay, they send me this prior authorization, this should occur, the patient should get a medicine, then you have all these other little hoops that you never thought of to jump through. I think even if with the resistance to paying for the medicine, it would have been so, it would still be easier if you knew, it was more straightforward. This is what you have to do. Once you do this, it's okay. But you have all these networks and all these different hodgepodge of coverages, and you have to match that to particular patients. So the level of frustration, and even for the providers, is there as well as for the patient. So that's part of the scenario right now.
And that is a frustration because a lot of those requirements that insurance companies create, they vary by insurance company. They're not evidence-based. There's no evidence to say that you should come in a certain number of times or fail on some lifestyle program before you should be eligible for medication.
And that's really not a requirement for any other disease that we treat.
Right. You don't have to fail lifestyle interventions before you can start diabetes medications or blood pressure medications. So, and that's never been the case for any of those, even when those were more expensive. So, Verlyn, what is the role of advocacy in obesity treatment?
So I think we now have a lot more treatment options than we had before. And as we talk about those inconsistencies, I think we are making some progress towards access, but it has taken number of people to be consistent and persistent in working towards this goal. So the Obesity Action Coalition, for example, has been a stalwart in advocating for patients with obesity in a number of different arenas. I am always reminded that one action by one person can make a difference. And if you give me, if you allow me some forbearance here, I'll tell you a story that has driven my medical career. When I went to University of Maryland, I was assigned a mentor. He was the second person, African American, to go to University of Maryland, which at that time was a segregated medical school and hospital. And one night he was on call. He's African American with a Jewish resident, and an African American woman came in heart failure and could not be admitted because there was not a bed available on the African American female ward. They looked at each other and sat her in the Caucasian woman's ward. The next day on rounds, nobody said anything. And in that moment, desegregation at the University of Maryland Hospital died at the hands of two residents. So anybody can be an advocate, is what I'm trying to say, in large ways and small ways, whether it's working with the employers to cover these meds, whether it's working with your local medical societies, with the Obesity Medicine Association, or taking on advocacy roles at state levels.
Well, that's great. Vaveen, what do you see as some
I think
advocacy
that is,
opportunities?
I think that is well said, and it's also about empowerment, empowering the providers to let providers recognize and really adopt the attitude that I can do something about it, because it's not just throwing up your hands up in the air and being afraid. And you don't have to be a big orator. You don't have to be able to stage a march or a sit out, but just doing the little that you can, talking about it when the opportunities come up, be part, even just being part of the crowd to say, this is not right. We need to do something, or telling others in your professional community, and also telling the patient, write a letter, do something, so we can, we, meaning the patients and providers together, can start letting our voices be heard, and whatever opportunities present themselves, like as Dr. Warrington said, the Obesity Action Coalition is a great organization. Obesity Medicine Association is a great way of channeling all of this concern, so that hopefully we can get the message to the right ears, so that something can be done. Because as Dr. Warrington also said earlier, this is a great example of disparity in medicine. And as you said, Dr. Penning, why do we have to prove that a patient needs these medic? Why do they have to meet these thresholds or requirements for a chronic disease? It's not done with any other process, any other situation. So I do certainly agree that advocacy is important.
Well, that's great. And call me Nick.
Definitely.
I think it's important that we talk to our colleagues. I think it's important that we talk to our patients. I think every appeal that we do is a form of advocacy as well. What are some of the resources that the OMA has for advocacy?
So I have found my legs on the Obesity Medicine Association's Advocacy Committee. They're a great group of passionate people who are willing to teach, who are very supportive, who are willing to share time and resources. And that has been a really great place for me to land. I have gone from being, you know, not wanting to rock the boat, so to speak, to having had conversation with multiple legislators in Pennsylvania, with our Department of Health and Human Services. And really, it doesn't take much. It just takes the confidence to be able to do that. And so the Obesity Medicine Association has provided me a home that says, even if you fall flat, there are people there who are going to pick you up. So.
And Vivi, do you find that as well?
Definitely. I totally agree. Because a lot of us who are in medicine, we tend to not, we see that part of what we, it's not a part, a kind of action that comes easily to us. We're used to taking care of the patient. Let somebody else fight those battles. But I think, fortunately, there's been a shift in how we think about things. And that accepting that advocacy, and it doesn't mean doing anything extraordinary or something weird outside of your comfort zone, but just doing something that's possible to change how things are done and how it affects our patients and our profession. I do agree.
Well, that's great. So I think we need to talk about it. We need to talk with our colleagues, with our patients, with our legislatures, and we need to challenge the status quo, right?
Definitely.
Well, thank you very much for your great insights today. It was great talking with you about advocacy for obesity. And I think our patients really need that. And it really is a very rewarding thing when we can provide the care that helps people get to a healthier place.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Obesity, a Disease. For more information about obesity medicine podcasts and other valuable resources from the clinical leaders in obesity medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode and want to listen regularly, head over to iTunes where you can subscribe, rate, and leave us a much appreciated review. The views expressed in this episode are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please join us again for our next episode of Obesity, a Disease.